This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
2-hour preview of the month's events with March Music Moderne's artistic director, Bob Priest.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:31. Coming up next, we hear an interview with psychotherapist Dr. Harriet Fraud on capitalism, family, and family values. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia with your host, Chris Andre.
Let me turn now and welcome my guest. She is Dr. Harriet Fraud, a person with whom I collaborate from time to time, as many of you know. She is a psychotherapist, a hypnotherapist. She works in New York City. She's the author, most recently, of a book, together with myself and Stephen Resnick, called Class Struggle on the Home Front. She writes and publishes in the new service Truth Out, but also in Tikkun magazine and website, International Psychohistory Journal, and several other places. So, Dr. Fraud, Harriet, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Today's discussion is going to focus on a topic called family values and the economy. We live here in the United States where a great deal of attention is paid to family values. Not just our conservative fellow citizens, but almost everybody feels the need to say often that we're committed to family values, that the family is an important institution, perhaps even the most important institution in our society, and that we are committed as a nation to support and encourage families and family values. Okay, that's what I want to talk about, but I want to start the conversation by raising two questions about the so-called commitment to family values. The first has to do with something called paid family leave. The 31 other most developed economic countries in Europe, in Asia, and so forth, provide paid annual family leave for at least a year, and in some cases, more than a year. In other words, one or sometimes more than one parent can take a leave to care for a new infant for a year and be paid so that it is not an imposition on the family. The United States is among the few nations, literally it's a small handful, that does not provide anything like that. There is no legal requirement for paid family leave. Most Americans do not have any paid family leave, and even the small number of Americans who have some paid family leave do not have more than a few weeks, and they are a tiny minority of the workforce. So how do you square this bizarre refusal to provide the support that other countries do for families, particularly couples that are having a child, with this commitment, so-called, to family values? We have one of the lowest minimum wages in the developed world. We pay people $7.25 an hour as the federal minimum wage. It is 50% or more higher in most European countries, just to give you an idea. Even some states in the United States find it so abhorrent, like Washington and Oregon, that they too make it $9 and $10 an hour because, among other reasons, how can you raise a family if you're earning $7.25 an hour? You can't provide your children with even the minimum. So how do you explain or understand that we are committed to family values, sort of, but in our economic policy, we don't seem to carry through on that commitment?
We're committed a lot more to capitalist profit than we are to family values. And what am I talking about here? What I'm talking about is that ever since the 1970s, wages have remained flat. And in the 70s, white males, this was never available for minorities, but white or for white women or minority women, got a family wage on which they could support a family. Since wages have tapered off and been flat, continuously since then, maybe a little blip here and there. And since just in the last year, the 99% have gone down 0.4% on average, while the top have gone up 1%, incomes have gone up 11%. We're looking at the question, okay, put our money where our mouth is. Where is our money going? And if we look at the priorities nationally, where is our money going? Well, about $1 trillion, actually $711 billion, is going towards our military, which has more military hardware and resources, as our families have the least, but it has the most, among all the other highly militarized nations combined. And as our wages have gone down, and as our children's health has gone down, and as our infant mortality has gone up, and as our families have gone down to the point that one out of four U.S. children is on food stamps and living at or one half of American children are either living at or just above the poverty level, whereas the military has grown 81%, quite dramatic. And we have closely related, in terms of family values, another profitable sector, which is gun sales. The Washington Post glibly declared the U.S. gun industry has been one of the brightest spots in the U.S. economy in recent years, even through the recent downturn. This year, which was 2012, it racked up $11.7 billion in sales. So we're talking about putting our money where our mouth is, which is to the producers of military weapons that make us the hegemonic or overwhelming military power of the world, and also ranks us among the last in terms of the UN register of child well-being. We are second to the bottom of the developed countries in everything except healthcare, where we are the bottom.
Let's assume that the folks who say we are a society committed to the family and family values are sincere, just for the moment. Then how do you explain that they nonetheless don't have family leave, pay an absurd low minimum wage, focus so many of their resources on the military, support a gun industry, all things that by most stretches of the imagination are not consistent, or at least not very, with family values? What's the problem? What is it that is intruding on the way we handle our economic life that sacrifices, in a sense, our families?
Well, in our society, the elephant in the room of all of these discussions is the elephant of capitalism, which basically has been responsible for outsourcing decent jobs and outsourcing services and changing wages to lower them or keep them flat in order to create profit. And we also have had weak unions that have not defended us against outsourcing. They've been very much company unions in that they wanted a bigger share. They didn't want to take over like the European unions do. They're socialist unions or sometimes communist unions. And so we have had a set of priorities that declares family values, but actually neglects family values. In terms of maternity leaves, which are granted in almost paid maternity level leave is part of almost every country in the world. The only people with no paid maternity leave are the United States, Somalia, Papua New Guinea.
And Liberia,
and
I noticed.
Liberia. Right. Now, so we're right up there with Papua New Guinea, Somalia, which is in constant chaos, and Liberia. What are we talking about? And that's because we are a country in which the capitalist elephant takes up the whole room, and the family is basically somewhere pressed against the side of the room with no space. And the same groups that quite powerfully appreciate mothering and family labor do nothing to support it. Because as now, half of the workforce, approximately 45% of the workforce, is female. They fight childcare. Reagan was the first one to veto Head Start for everyone. And these are the people who veto and kill Head Start, family leave, maternity pay, paternity pay, elder care, teen pregnancy help, addiction help. They veto everything that would help the family. Aid to single mothers. You know, 42%, as the family has, the reason that we have this is the family has collapsed in the United States. The majority of women in the United States for the first time since they began counting in 1880 is single. And they're not single for any reason except that the basic deal of being protected and supported while you raise children is over. Men can't support women anymore because the capitalist colossus has decided it's more profitable to outsource their job or mechanize their jobs. And particularly male jobs have been hit because the hardest hit sectors have been heavy machinery, manufacturer, high ticket sales, and construction, where males were dominant.
It's interesting to me as an economist that when there is even a little bit debate about all these kinds of issues that you've brought up, the argument not to help fund paid leave for people, not to raise the minimum wage, is always put in terms of what it will do to business. We don't hear about what it will do to families.
Exactly.
So the same forces that push all these things that are supposed to help business wait until another occasion when there isn't an economic question on the table to talk in great poetic terms about the family. But it's a disconnect, is what you're saying.
It's a total disconnect. Yeah. Because also at the same time, and it should be understood by our listeners, that I am not advocating women's financial dependency on men, which I think destroyed many relationships because women stayed for financial reasons. Men bitterly stayed for their reasons of guilt and the dependency of women and children on them. It made resigned and bitter relationships often and polarized men and women against each other.
And also wasn't good for children.
It was terrible
growing up in that situation
to grow up with that kind of conflict. And it also totally dislodges the deep and respectful and collective relationships you can have among equals. One of the troubles in our whole society that makes the intimate arena a disaster is that the ideal of democracy at home, of democracy among parents and children, of giving each according to their ability and taking from each according to their needs, giving according to their needs, respecting their different needs, and having a collective approach is very rare in our society, partly because the airwaves are owned by those same capitalist people. And so you can have a media with all sorts of guns and product placement, but very little placement for a primacy of egalitarian collective relationships, both in our economy and in our families and between parents and children. So you have this capitalist colossus over everything, which is the dictator of our society. And that means that families are out of luck, particularly children.
We're continuing our interview with Dr. Harriet Fraud. Would you say that the family is an institution that is under assault in our society, that is an institution
Definitely.
Being undercut? And how do you see that, and what do you see as the reasons for it?
Well, I see it being systematically undercut. And the way it's undercut is that women are required in the labor force because families can't make a living, and also because now 42% of people give birth outside of a marriage or traditional family unit, and about 75% of the children in the United States grow up without both biological parents present at some point or another, and we do nothing to help single parents. So, for example, in the United States, mothers get paid 70% of what men are paid, whether they're fathers or not, because there isn't significant help given to parents. In Sweden, where single parents are given primacy of housing and jobs, you have women earning 98% of what men earn. And in the United States...
So in other words, Sweden gives a privilege, it gives a favor to single parents because... Since they have a harder time sustaining and building a family, they get the support. It's a logical
That's
argument,
right.
But we don't have a comparable thing here.
Right. Subsidized housing. And also all of these countries, whether it's France or Sweden, have free after-school programs and summer programs and childcare and all of those things which we don't have. What you have is you have then the whole terrain of the family and intimate relationships has changed because men can no longer support women and women have to work outside the home and there's no help for families. And so that men who often feel under siege as men
because of this change situation
want extra services from women who are working a third shift by working at home and working with children and working on the job and trying to be sexy, they're not going to do it. That's why the majority of women is unmarried, and the majority of people who initiate divorces now are women, and who refuse marriage are women. So you have, if the center of family was marriage, that's over. That's basically over because the economic conditions of existence for that are support for children in terms of child care and after school care and summer care. Here's an example of family values. The average cost of child care that's decent, I'm not talking about high quality, is the same as a community college's tuition. The average cost of quality daycare is between $30,000 and $40,000 a year, which is the median income is about $45,000 a year, so that would take up your whole income. So you have millions of children in substandard daycare parked in their soiled diapers in front of televisions during the maximal years of brain development, 0 to 2 years old. And you have very few federal programs for that era. And so that therefore, you totally abandon family values in order to create greater profit. And you do that as no other developed nation in the West does.
This is an argument that we're destroying.
We are destroying families.
By a mixture of abuse and neglect of the kinds of things that other societies are doing in the name of family values that they feel they have to carry through on. We seem to have here 90% rhetoric and very little reality.
Very little reality. And, you know, I'll take just one example. Women who are not married and don't have children earn more than men do. Women who are married but have no children make 98% U.S. women. Mothers make 70% of what males earn. You know, it's
so
right
it's literally
there.
Built into our
system. A penalty
for
being a parent and having a penalty for being in a relationship and getting married, a penalty for having children, which is why the biggest increase in types of housing is single-person housing, and the second is couples with no children. For the first time, the birth rate is going well down because people are smart enough to see it. For a long time, it was sustained by immigrants who came here not realizing how costly and unrewarded it is to have children, except for the emotional rewards you can garner in your exhausted time with your children. But that now they're not bothering to come. As many Mexicans are going home as are coming because there's no point. And so now the birth rate is actually going down because it's, you know, there are no paid maternity and paternity leaves as there are in the other developed countries. So that you're actually hurting families. Another dramatic example is by having one out of three African men in the penal system, you're taking people away from their children. We have the biggest incarceration rate of any developed country, and there's no help for children in this situation or to integrate children and families together when that happens. And so we really are a very backward country as we give everything to capitalist efficiency. We're also the only ones without proportional representation. So, and with private money allowed in elections, which is not allowed in the other developed countries. And so you get one person, one vote, no more. One person buys other people's votes. Yes. I mean, even in a country like France, which also has social problems, which also has great diversity, which begins its children with poverty, but the children end up much less poor. They begin with 25% of their children being born into poverty. But when you factor in all the social benefits, 9%. Still too much. However, their early child care is by experts. It's free from 3 years old on. Their after-school programs are heavily subsidized. You can never spend more than 15% of your income between 0 and 3, which is when the programs become free, on daycare. We're talking about another world for families. And the reason that the French do that is that they want to encourage population and families. The United States has counted on poor immigrants coming here and being exploited and has a terrible family program, and often their decimation of families is couched in family values. So Reagan, who was instrumental in decimating wages, was also the first to deny Head Start for everyone on the basis that it interfered with the family, just as the opponents of public education said it interfered with the power of the family.
So you take economic resources away from the family in the name of respecting the family.
Exactly.
And undercut the family in the name of supporting family.
That's right.
It is an example that would make the concept of self-delusion take on a whole new meaning. Let me turn a little bit and ask you for the other side. In a sense, I don't want everyone to get down about this reality. Let me ask you, what would it look like in your mind if we had a program or a commitment that was real? In other words, if we seriously wanted our economic system to work to support and sustain family as an institution, give us some idea of what that might look like.
It would start out with universal quality health care. We have the worst health care in the developed world, and we pay the most for it. And that would, of course, include maternity care and so on.
Basic health care for everyone, whether or not you're employed, whether or not your parents are in a job that carries health insurance, you get that as a right of citizenship.
Exactly.
And that's a commitment all these countries make, and we are really among the very, very few that don't do that.
The three most backward. You'd also have maternity and paternity leaves. In some countries like France, you can get half pay up to 5 years as a maternity leave. In countries like Norway, they have compulsory paternity leave as well as maternity leave, so you can't get extra credits at work for abandoning your kids when they're born.
In other words,
and
the
not
father,
bonding with
as
them
well as the mother,
has to stay home. Exactly.
Interesting.
You would have a good system of child care like the French system, where they have little houses for children of one type, 0 to 3, and the other from 3 to 7 before they go into the public schools. There's a medical personnel at all times, so if a child is sick, they can go in to be taken care of. They have a pediatric nurse in every facility in case somebody gets sick. They have their shots there, and they're fed in daycares. They're fed 3 meals there. You can have your child there if you want to from 7 in the morning to 7 at night, picked up, clean, bathed, and in a clean outfit.
Universal medical care, a serious quality child care program.
And maternity and paternity
leave. Maternity and paternity leave. What else would you advocate?
I would advocate educational parks for children from 6 to 12. Big facilities that are, of course, integrated with the highest quality educational facilities for everyone. And education parks for children who are 3 to 6 as well.
Bringing all different
all
kinds of people
together. It would save a lot of money because you wouldn't have duplication. People can be bused in and they can have the most advanced science.
So it's the old argument again, not to allow
private
spreading
resources
out of schools to different neighborhoods, rich and poor, not to allow private versus public schools.
Exactly.
But to bring the community together. So everyone has an interest in the best possible school for everyone.
A high-quality school. People could send their kids to private school if they wanted to, but they wouldn't because this would be the best quality. It would be the kind of quality that Obama's children have at the Sidwell Friends School that costs $43,000 a semester. But that would be the quality of care for everyone.
So it's the opposite, for example, of the movement to charter schools now that are fracturing. And each little charter school can provide whatever quality it does to its little community, and the rest of the schools, the people who can't afford it or can't get into those, they are left. So you get this first class, second class, third class quality of education.
Which you get from living in an elegant neighborhood, even if you send your kid to a public school. The PTA in New York in one school raised $25,000. So that means they can hire their own art teacher and math coordinator and blah, blah, whereas other schools can't raise so much money. You'd also have paid vacations, which, the French have a guaranteed
5 weeks.
You'd have family leave. You'd have special supports for single parents. You'd have supports for elders so that they don't become a burden or isolated in single room occupancy hotels and degenerating and creating huge Medicare problems, actually. And you'd have free education from daycare through university or training school.
To sum up, all of the things you list we know are possible because we know they're achieved in other societies. Societies that have no greater resources than this
Fewer.
One does. So it's possible. It's needed. It would, in fact, be consistent with family values.
Absolutely.
What's lacking is the political will and the organization to make that happen against the interests of profit-making, which argue and push against it.
That's right. And what we don't have is a strong political presence that says, no, you don't, when these things are cut and they're not passed. We don't have the political organization of the mass of people to press for what's good for us. And so what our legislators do, since who pays the piper calls the tunes, is call the tunes of capitalist profit at the expense of the family while touting family values.
Dr. Harriet Fraud, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. And this
very
is a
much.
Very important issue. You can find her work also at harrietfraud.com, HarrietFraad.com. Where you can see her work, including eventually this program.
That was an excerpt from the program Economic Update with host economist Richard Wolff, who interviewed psychotherapist Dr. Harriet Fraud on capitalism, family, and family values. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM, Corvallis and Albany. The time is 9:58. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we'll hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, an in-depth interview with Ava Gollinger, a former advisor to Hugo Chavez, about the man most likely to succeed Chavez as president. Also, investigative reporter Greg Palast. And at 11, the Bike Show looks at the first critical mass event in 1992 and the changes since then. They feature the program Action Speaks, which examines underappreciated 20th century dates that changed America.
KBOO Community Radio Night for the 2013 Blazers season will be April 17th, the last home game of the regular season.
Tickets are limited for this unique opportunity where a portion of the proceeds will help support your community radio station.
More information can be found at kboo.fm/blazers.
This Friday is International Women's Day, and KBOO will celebrate the occasion with a 35-hour extravaganza of music, interviews, and news produced and hosted by KBOO Women. We'll kick off this special day of programming on Thursday, March 7th at 7 p.m. with a live broadcast panel on the history of Portland's women's movement. And the all-women broadcast will continue until 6 a.m. on Saturday. For a full schedule, see the website kboo.fm/womensday2013.
morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, March 6th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Well, another Portlander charged with conspiracy to provide material support to terrorists, and another round of leaking tanks at Hanford. Of course, we all know that the only thing worse than finding a leaking tank at Hanford is finding half a leaking tank at Hanford. And medals for the gamers who control the drones that dish out targeted assassinations. Why are they higher than the Purple Cross, the Bronze Star? A lot of people are wondering about that. And perhaps the man to explain it will be our new CIA director, and I suppose we might even term him Drone Master, John Brennan. It's torture dished up from the air. First, the National Weather Service has this for us, however. Showers today, highs near 47, light winds. And tonight, again, it's going to be a wet one. Overcast skies, lows around 38, and medium winds. Tomorrow, again, we have those cloudy skies, showers, a high near 49. Tomorrow night, it'll be cold, lows around 37, and not much in the way of wind driving it. So the alternative forecast, we got a last quarter fruit moon in Sagittarius, 23 days old now. The synodic outlook is not a good time to sow anything. Work on weeds and compost. Also, you might